Say the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
For the recording, since I forgot to turn it on, this is February 28th, 10 a.m. We're having a special meeting today, and quickly I'd like to say that we have a lot of information that's going to be given to everyone today, and this is going to be the first of many workshops to plan for the future of the fire department in Groveland Service District. We're going to open the floor to public comments, and then again we will open it at the end of the presentation. So are there any...
Director,
I'm sorry, can we approve? Yes, roll call. Thank you very much. All present?
We are.
All directors are present. Thank you very much. Okay. Approve the order of the agenda.
I move that we approve the order of the agenda.
I'll second.
Thank you very much. Order approved. Unanimous. Okay, open the floor for public comment, please.
Good morning. My name is Daryl Slocum, and I'm the Executive Director of the Smart Area Foundation. I appreciate the opportunity to address the board today, and do realize that it is a special meeting. However, this particular item does have a relevance as it pertains to fire. But the Smart Area Foundation is a charitable community foundation that receives grants from the community, and this week we presented a grant application to our board for an SCBA filling station in the Groveland Community Services District. The board normally says yes, no, or maybe. In this particular instance, it's a little bit of a unique response from the board, so I wanted to come and deliver it in person. The request from the district totaled around $32,000, and our board came back with a grant of $20,000. However, they also directed me to help you collect the remaining balance to make the SCBA filling station project a reality. So I'm here today to tell you that news, but also to paraphrase a famous movie line, to entice you to help me help you raise the rest of this money. Because what we're going to do is we're going to establish a charitable fund at the foundation for the Groveland Community Services District. And then I will be drafting a letter, sending it to staff, outlining the ways the community can come together to help support this particular cause. We have a variety of mechanisms to collect charitable donations, including cash, checks, appreciated stock, and required minimum distribution from retirement accounts. We want to make your constituents, your supporters, aware of these various methods to support this particular entity so that we can make it a reality. That's all I have for today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Slocum.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was for the STBA filling station for the fire equipment.
Fills bottles.
Yes. Filling the oxygen bottles.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we can open the floor to the public. Anyone else? Yes.
Paula. Well, I was hoping to ask Mr. Slocum, what was the name of his organization and where is it located and how does it benefit us?
The Sonora
He's
Area
the Foundation. The CEO with the Sonora Area Foundation. Sorry, Bob.
Sorry, go ahead.
And the Sonora Area Foundation is a charitable, it's a nonprofit organization that takes funds and gives them out for public purposes.
Okay, I'm familiar with the name, I just didn't catch it. And how does this...
We submitted a request for funding for this breathing air compressor to sit at the fire department and serve the region when there's a need for that. And they granted $20,000 toward the $34,000 request.
Okay.
And so they're setting up a charitable fund in an effort to get the public more aware of the GCSD fire, the fire department, the relationship with CAL FIRE, and the needs that we have, and and to support us. It's really
good. Thank you.
Any other public comments? Okay, we'll turn this over to Mr. Campa.
Thank
Got to give me a second with the technology. I've got this thing running on a loop that I didn't realize was going to be so annoying.
Are you on lunch break today?
So let's go all the way back. And I certainly want to recognize and appreciate the crowd from the county that has come. We've got our supervisor, John Graham. We also have, I'm surprised that the county offices are even open right now. You know, we've got all the main players from the county here, and I'll tell you, it's very much appreciated to have them as part of this discussion, because this is a big passion. This is a big concern, a big interest, and I know this board has been very determined to take a look at the fire department, take a look at our short-term and long-term needs, and what we can do to make sure that we have a solid department going forward, because that is extremely important to the community of Groveland. So basically, my discussion is not going to be political in any way. I'm not going to be addressing detail about calls and levels of calls and who goes where and what kind of equipment we send to this and that. In reality, what I'd like to do is I'd really like to stick to the basics today, because we have new board members that have not had the experience with the fire department. We have myself, who I've really been working with the district for just a little over a year, and so this was a real research exercise on my part to get to know the department and the history and where we are and what our needs are for the future. It's for our department staff at CAL FIRE to understand a little bit of the history and the needs and the concerns that we have, and then also to get the county. Continue with the county engaged in what we're doing here and the benefit that we provide in the region. And then to talk a little bit about the finances, knowing that this is just the beginning of the discussion. Okay, that's really really the important thing. And this is, I really like this graphic, because whoever put it together had a lot of forethought. The fact that it's focused on Groveland doesn't mean that the CAL FIRE logo behind it is not prominent in this, but it's really a relationship between the district and CAL FIRE, and we'll get into that. So this is a workshop level plan for the future. In all reality, as I talked about, we want to understand the department, the level of service that we provide, and primarily the funding needs. We've got some different options that we can look at as far as revenue and expense, and then I want to get some direction. The important thing for me is to know where to focus my efforts in the near future. And I just gave a little summary of just a snapshot of last year. We'll be putting together a lot more data so that we can understand what the trends have been, but we had 509 calls in 2018, and all I did was list the kind of the top things that we talk about. 285 of those, so you know, well over half, were emergency medical. Three building fires. We've got a fire chief in here that probably saw a lot more building fires per year back decades ago. But it's definitely a different animal now. But still, building fires are a big concern of ours. We've had a couple this year already. Car fires. And 15 public or assist with the Sheriff's Department. And that's kind of an interesting thing that you may not know, is that whenever there's an incident, there's many times that we get called out as the fire department to help out with that. So this was a recent tour that we did when we went out and got the board and public acclimated with the department. We've got the main reason that I've pulled this together at the board's direction today was that we've got a revenue and expense problem. They have not been in balance. When you look at our budget, when we sat down with all the fire chiefs and everyone else, and we're looking at a budget that has $300,000, $400,000 in the negative at the end of the year, where revenue is less than expenses, that's a big concern. It has not necessarily been materializing. So when you look at our financial statements, our annual audits, we're lucky that for the last 3 years, the cost of the CalPAR contract has come in lower, and the cost of the Amador plan, which is the extended staffing we have at the Merrill Station, has not been charged to the district. So those are big cost savings that have not occurred, but did occur this year. The Amador is now funded by the district this year, so it's a $260,000 change, approximately. In our budget, okay? So we will be going in the negative this year for sure. And that's not a good place to be because our reserves are limited, and we'll talk about that. So that's what I mean by the budgeted expenses are materializing. We have to estimate that we're gonna be funding the Amador each and every year. It's that we only, and we'll talk more about the staffing at our current station, but we need four staff. That's the main thing. The revenue is relatively flat. Understand, we do not and cannot spend water and sewer revenue to fund the fire department in any way. Those are enterprise funds. They're business funds. They have to stand on their own. The fire department is funded by property taxes, and it was funded by assessments as well. There are other sources of funding, grants and reimbursements and all of that, but our revenue is relatively simple, and there's also a handout that has the detail. It's a four-page handout, and it shows four different financial scenarios that we're going to talk about. But you can see at the bottom of that sheet, the revenue is listed, and the total expenses are listed. In fact, all of the expenses are listed, and I can explain that. We currently have no equipment replacement fund. Been talked about for decades, and when I look at the county folks, I know that that's something that we all strive to have as an adequate fund. It's really easy to predict what those costs are going to be, but every fire engine, a first in engine, is about $600,000 or more. Yeah, I mean, okay. I'm getting some good feedback here. I wanted to see a number that sounded nice and round, 600,000. But anyway, between 600 and 800,000 is probably a really good number for a piece of equipment today. And I'll tell you, the last piece of equipment we bought, its life expectancy is less than the one that's 20 years old. So just like things are getting expendable after 10 years. And I'm just telling you that we've got to think strongly about the future of that, because I thought this thing was going on its own again. Boy, I'm seeing things. It was a crazy day. We've got to think about that because it's a big component of our budget, or could be. And the reserves could be depleted in as little as 3 to 5 years. That was my main concern and the main reason that I continue to raise this issue for planning purposes, is we don't want to plan in haste. We don't want to be up against a budget where we're going to be out of money, and it very well could happen. I'm not trying to say we're broke, we're going to be broke tomorrow, we got to stop spending. I'm just telling you that we need to plan. We need to think about the future. So here's a brief history, because we really need to know where we've been to talk about where we are today. In 2012, we had our own department, meaning that we had our own staff in that department, our own GCSD staff that were paid, and paid GCSD employees. We had a department manager, which was the fire chief. So they, you know, as part of our organizational structure, they were actually in this. They weren't in this office, but they were part of the management team of the district. We had three full-time paid captains, three full-time paid fire engineers, and then we had paid administrative staff. We have 15 reserve. They were part-time paid. They received a stipend, a small amount while they were training. And then we also had a volunteer assistant chief. Okay. So I'm just kind of looking at the board to make sure we're following along.
Did anybody here then?
I know that not everybody was here, but
I was here then.
That look about
yeah,
right.
Yeah, John, yeah, I saw your name.
That's about right.
The board, yeah.
So this was...
The secretary.
Yeah.
This, and volunteer.
If you look back to 2009, and the reason I looked at that is I just kind of wanted to see where we were training, and it was consistent with everything else we've seen in the district, where between 2005, 2000, you know, we really cut back on staffing. Remember, we went from 33 to 18. We cut back in the department as well. We lost 3 full-time positions between 2009 and 2012. So we were already on that trend to cut costs. But also looking at the budgets over those times, and now I'll get into the budgets on the next slide, we were pretty balanced each year. We had 1.2 million in revenue coming in, and we had 1.2 million in expense, and we worked hard to balance it. And that was it. We did a really good job of keeping it that way. The revenue was made up of approximately $900,000 in property tax revenue, and the property tax is not our own revenue source that we charge. It is the ad valorem property tax that's based on the value of your home that's collected by the county and then distributed to the district based on the Prop 13 AV8 formulas. Okay, so there's a fixed formula that allocates that property tax, and then it increases a small amount each year. We also had, at that time, a property owner-approved property assessment. So it was an assessment that was based on the type of property use, the size of your property, and that was in place and generated about $300,000 in revenue. So the total of those two kept the budget funded. And at the time, that expense budget did have some pretty significant equipment replacement funds. And, you know, and I just went through the staffing. So there was a lot of things that were getting done within that were currently not getting done in the replacement and upgrades and all that. However, things weren't perfect. We had an annual assessment report. That's what kept that assessment going year after year. But again, it expired June 30th of 2012. We had a 10-year sunset on it. And at that time, the board chose to go forward with a special tax. So on March 1st, 2012, understand this thing ended June 30th, 2012. We could not levy that assessment the next year. We had to have voter approval of something. The board chose to go with a special tax. That was March 1st was the date that the board adopted the resolution. March 7th was the deadline. June 5th was the election. So, and it was specifically to fund wages and benefits. Okay, we were still going to use the property taxes to fund all the other stuff, equipment replacement and everything, but that's what the intention of that special tax was at that time. And it was $107 a parcel, half of that approximately for vacant parcels. Pretty simple formula, allowed to increase by $3 a year. And it also had a sunset, okay? Taxes are not required. The special taxes are not required to have a sunset. We obviously felt that we needed to have a sunset for either accountability or to get it passed or whatever, okay? This is the way that it went forward in that very short time frame between March 1st and June 5th. And that was the result. And that is a significant no vote. And we can't put ourselves back there, but that's exactly, when you look at that $300,000, if we had that today, we would be able to stay fairly close to balance. We still wouldn't have an equipment replacement fund. We'd struggle every year. But we that is the difference, really, between success and failure right now. We did then enter into a, what the district did is enter into a contract with, basically through the cooperation of the county on August 28, 2012, through a series of meetings, the board decided to negotiate with the county and CAL FIRE and come up, go work into the county's agreement with CAL FIRE to be able to have CAL FIRE provide the staffing for our station. Okay? Much as Tuolumne County Fire Department has the stations and CAL FIRE provides the staffing for those stations. And so we are in the current agreement through June 30th of 2020. It provides, obviously, emergency fire protection, medical, and rescue response, dispatch services, and then what's called the Extended Fire Protection and Service Availability, or the Amador Plan, okay? That is providing funding for the other station on Merrill Road that has firefighters as well. Keeps us fully staffed, because you saw the master plan from 2007. I included that without a lot of narrative because I wanted you to become familiar with what happened in the early 2000s with the changes in the regulations for fire departments, where the number of volunteers was plummeting. It started even before that in the 90s, but the regulations became very stringent. The training, you've heard it all before. Volunteer departments were becoming less and less prevalent and strong, and career firefighting districts were on the increase, which takes your cost up, obviously, when people aren't volunteering. But then also you have a different level of service that's being provided. And so that master plan also talked about some of the weaknesses that we had in coverage. You looked at some of those maps, there were areas that we couldn't get to within the standard NFPA 7-minute response time and some other things. So those are important things for us to consider, that nothing has really changed in where our station is and how quickly we can get to some of these incidents that are farther out within the district boundaries, to the existing developed area. So CAL FIRE bills us quarterly. Based on actual expenses that they have, and those are estimated and budgeted every year. So our smiling folks here in front of, what piece of equipment is that?
786, isn't it?
It's the antique.
Standing careful, I took that on fire before.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I'm an antique.
But you're not
probably
fire anymore.
Air bags, it probably doesn't have a lot of up-to-date
shoulder belts.
It has a clutch.
So here's what we have at our station right now. Okay, this is station 78. It's the one that we all pass by on the highway. We have a minimum of two personnel on staff, 24/7, 365. And that's the important thing. They're there all day and all night. And it's really five staff. So when you say two, you go think that's all there are, but in reality it's five, because there are vacation, sick, rotating schedules, all of that. Five is what we have, a captain and four apparatus engineers. Again, they're all CAL FIRE employees. They're trained. They are under the personnel management of CAL FIRE and meet their standards for training and development. And they take care of all of that and can provide us whatever documentation we want of how that all works. There's also a good arrangement between Tuolumne County Fire and CAL FIRE and the district that allows for personnel to be moved around. Keeps the overtime cost down, because again, we pay based on actual costs. So if we've got fire after fire after fire after fire, things are going on, we're going to max out that Schedule A contract. And if that continues, then that Schedule A contract amount will probably look at increasing that in the future. But now we've done a pretty good job of estimating, and the Tuolumne County Fire and CAL FIRE have done a great job of keeping that within the budget. Couple things that are important to know. They assist with fire cause determination. and investigation. Sometimes you don't think about that from this perspective, but, you know, in reality, if you've got somebody that's out firebugging or whatever, we're certainly going to want to know about it. And we're, you know, these are really, really important things that, they're engaged in. And fire plan and code compliance, one thing we don't think about a lot is that within that payment that we make, we get this guy, too, you know, Josh White, and all of the expertise and experience that, those folks bring from the administrative and career-long experience as professional firefighters, and the administration of the department, and training and leadership, so really, really big stuff. Then we've got so that's the downtown station, then we've got the Merrill Road station, which has also a minimum of two personnel, 24/7, 365. They would not have that during the winter time without the amateur. That's the big thing with the amateur program, is that that station would close down and it would activate again during fire season. You'd have people there in activity during fire season, they'd lock the doors if not. Amateur allowed for a fairly low-cost way to add another station, and so that's what we get just down the street. There's the three firefighters, firefighter one personnel. And again, it says firefighter one, but when you're rotating staff, you might have higher-level staff rotate in, but that's pretty much a minimum standard. And you guys jump on me if I'm missing
you. Spot on.
Okay. Because these are all minimum staffing. When we talk about two people, there might be four people crashing out there for the night, you know, for a couple weeks as they're going through some training or issue or something. Or during a heavy fire time or an actual event. So these are minimum standards. At that location, Cal Fire provides the engine and its operator. They provide for some of the facility maintenance expenses, some of the facility maintenance expenses associated with the people that are there under the amateur are funded by our amateur contribution. And they fill that all out in detail separately. At this station, I don't think I mentioned, at our primary station, the district station that we own, we provide the facility, we provide all the upkeep, we provide all the supplies, the cleaning, the propane, the vehicles, the equipment. There's a certain amount of stuff that Cal Fire brings in, maybe their own personal turnouts that they have through Tuolumne County Fire or whatever, but in reality, we provide the replacement of those, a certain number of turnouts, a certain number of SCBAs, a certain number of fire apparatus, vehicles, hose, tools, extrication equipment, medical supplies, all of those things we provide under this budget. Okay? And that's part of the Schedule A contract. So understand that this is on the website, and you might have a copy of it that has all of this. I'm not going to get into detail on exactly all of these provisions, but I thought some of this was really important to understand. As far as cost recovery on suppression costs and mutual aid costs, you know, obviously when we send equipment out on a state fire and all of those things, you've seen that we do get reimbursed. These guys will send out a piece of equipment, manpower, and we will get reimbursed for their time. We'll always have coverage here and equipment here that will be moved in, but there are certain events that we get reimbursed for. Also, if there were suppression costs, if there was somebody setting fires and they got busted and Cal Fire went after them and the court said, you're going to pay $7 million, and the district was damaged as part of that, and the district really pursued it, there could be some recovery on that. But, you know, there's, as you've seen, it's not always as easy as it sounds to go after and get through the courts and get paid for those costs. But the important part of these provisions are what to do with the vehicles and equipment. we have a responsibility to maintain the vehicles in accordance with standards, with state and federal regulations, and to provide equipment that meets those standards, because we're putting the firefighters in those vehicles, or whether they're district employees or whether they're Cal Fire employees or, you know, Tuolumne County employees, whoever they are, they have to know that that vehicle is going to roll down the road safely and get them where they need to be and get back. And as Chief and I were talking earlier, statistics are that the majority of the incidents and injuries and deaths that occur between firefighters is when they're in transit. And that happens, you know, like operator, might be equipment, whatever it is, might be somebody else, but still, we got to make sure those vehicles are safe. And we do, currently. We have, you'll see in that detailed budget, a line item that says staff, I think 14,000, that is district staff that's certified to work on the equipment and provides the maintenance services for that equipment and for the facility. And, you know, and those are all important things to know, is that we provide that service to keep that equipment up and running. So getting into the numbers a little bit, it's really a pretty predictable exercise. Because again, you can set the water and sewer enterprises aside. They have absolutely nothing to do with the fire. So fire stands on its own. It's got to have its own revenue. It's got to have its own expense. Property tax revenue is pretty predictable. You can estimate that it's going to be somewhere around 2% that it's going to increase. In the past, the states come in and take the property tax away for various purposes. I don't expect that to be in the foreseeable future for them to do that again in the same way that they did. But so 2% annually is pretty much what you can plan on. We already have projections for the next 4 or 5 years on the Cal Fire Schedule A contract expenses, and it's approximately 5%, between 4 and 5% increase in what we expect that to be. The same goes with the Amador, it's about 4%. So we can really plug those in, and you'll see that on that spreadsheet, on each of the four scenarios under Schedule A and under the Cal Fire numbers, that's the amount that they increase every year, is exactly what I was given as a reasonable number to plan on for budgeting in the future. We have equipment that we know what its age is, we know what its condition is, and we know when it needs to be replaced. It's really just a mathematical. You can extend the life out on something that's dead by a year or so while you're planning the next piece of equipment, but you know, last thing we want to do is send this vehicle out and lose the transmission between here and Tannehill. You know, so that is important stuff to know. So we also have all of the equipment. So I talk about in terms of capital equipment and fire engines, they're all capital purchases, but in reality, the apparatus, the fire engine, is so much more expensive than the dispensable stuff, than the hoses, the tools, the equipment, and the trucks and those kind of things, that those are separate. Okay, when we do our budgeting, because we've got to reserve more money for that 10-year, 15-year replacement of those $650,000, $700,000 piece of equipment. And so I also have other department operating expenses. You can see those are a fairly insignificant portion of the total budget. The other operating expenses that aren't the Cal Fire, Schedule A, and Amador contract, if I took those expenses out completely, never bought any fuel, didn't buy any propane, didn't buy any toilet paper, didn't clean the facility, didn't maintain the building, didn't do anything, just paid the contract, you'll see that we still have 5 years left. of cash. Okay? I mean, it's just, that's just the way it is. So what I can say, well, just cut expenses. Look at the top line. We got expenses of the contract, and we've got revenue to fund. So that's what we're talking about. So financial projections, that's where the graph is. I'm going to try to make this thing play. I'm probably going to have to go backwards a couple times. Ooh, I did it right. Okay. This may not mean a heck of a lot to you, except that center line is at zero. And it goes out to the 2024-25 year estimated. The fund balance is basically just the cash and that we have available in the bank. In the fire fund, we have right now we have a little bit over $1 million. We expect by the end of the fiscal year we'll be down around $880,000. So we'll be drawing down from that reserve by the end of this fiscal year. Because we're paying for Amadrome, we're paying for all the other expenses, okay? And so then, estimating that occurs next year and the year after, with no change of anything, we're not putting any money away for reserves or anything else, if those expenses occur the way that they did this year, or increase, it gets even worse, but that line is what it is. That $800,000 that's remaining in that fund will not be there. Okay, so that's just, and again, it's a lot of, we can have a lot of discussion about what ifs, but it's really just the contract and the amount of money that comes in. So, the next, this just shows that if we add the equipment replacement, which is a little over $200,000, between putting money away for replacement of the fire apparatus engines, and all of the $47,000 a year for all of the other stuff that we would spend. And that includes things like a new roof, new air conditioning, driveways, windows, beds, any of the larger expenses. And $180,000 a year, I believe it was, for equipment for the replacement of the three engines. Okay, so that's just pretty simple math. We refine it a little bit. I'm going to probably be within 5%. I might be within 2%, but that's what that graph looks like. So obviously, we're not going to be doing an equipment replacement fund this week. So I went too far. It doesn't matter a whole lot because they all go the same direction. So when we, if we have the equipment replacement fund, but we don't have to have the Amador, we're still in the negative at the end of the 2020-2021 year. That's the gray line. The best case scenario, and I call it best case just because it extends us out the furthest, is if we don't see the Amador cost for the next several years and we do not change our budget. In other words, we don't have any equipment breakdown. We don't have any major capital expenses. We just float with paying the Schedule A cost, and we don't have to pay Amador because the fire season gets extended or whatever. Magic happens. Then that cash remains until pretty much the end of the 2023-24 fiscal year. So we got to do something. And that's, I summarized that on the... that's the scenarios that I just talked about. The worst case in reality is that we lose an engine and have to replace it and have to decide whether we can spend $70,000 to do a major repair on a piece of equipment that we need to change out, or whether we're going to go out and try to find money to get a new engine. And we would be using or spending that $800,000 reserve down almost completely if we went out and had to buy one, because there was no grant, no gimme. And again, you don't see a discussion of grants in here because there's no way to know whether we're going to have a grant pay for a piece of equipment. It's not going to pay for a Schedule A contract. We know that. So we have to make sure we have at least that. But equipment, every once in a while a grant comes along. But if we don't have the money to be able to maintain it, we've got a, stop him talking to us. Obviously, we need some public engagement because there are a lot of people who really don't understand the department and don't understand the relationship between the district and CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE is really our fire department. They are Groveland CSD's contractor, just like the county is, you know, Tuolumne County Fire Department is CAL FIRE. I mean, it just works that easily. And in fact, I really, I'll tell you right now, I really would like to see when we replace any engine that it says Groveland Community Services District and CAL FIRE. I don't know whether that's, whether there's some logo protocol on it, but I mean, it is something we're using property tax dollars to fund. So we need to do some outreach and work with the county in any way, to help. And I know that we are working with the county in going through a countywide study of whether we can make the current structure of where the departments are, how they're staffed, how they're funded, how they function, whether we can make that work, or whether we need to back up and look at what the needs are based on response times and standards of service, and start building that structure toward that in the future. And that's where the county is going to be. They'll be having some discussions here pretty soon about that. And that's the a really important thing to know is that the county is very much engaged and very much understanding of the need to evaluate services. And so we need to bring that out to our customers here, our taxpayers as well. I think there's absolutely no doubt that we're going to need additional funding. It's not going to materialize from the sky. We can't charge customers for it, water and sewer customers. We might be able to recover some costs by charging for some services that we don't currently charge for, but those are really just going to cover the cost. They're not going to put $500,000, $400,000, $300,000 into what we need in the future. And then, you know, that would be the strategic financial plan. Part of that is going to happen if the county does move forward and continue to evaluate. We're going to look at this on a global scale because, you know, a big fire on the other side of the river is just as bad as on this side. So, I'm done yapping. From the board's perspective, do you have any questions? I'm going to actually go sit down and drink my water for a little while. Question about...
Yes, John.
Well, first I'd like to say that our relationship with CAL FIRE has been excellent. I do have to say that when this was all going on, I was opposed to it because I wanted us to keep our own fire department. But it has benefited us. CAL FIRE has taken very good care of us. When it comes to strike teams, they're using our equipment, which actually helps us because we can get paid for that. So it's been an awesome, partnership. And the thing about the Amador plan is we have to have it to be able to fight fire. Two in, two out is a rule that basically states that unless a fire is in the incipient state or there's a rescue, you cannot go into the burning building until there's two people that are going to go in and two people to rescue the people that are inside the building. So for us to be able to fight fire aggressively and save lives and property and all that, we need that. And you need the personnel. Four people on a fire is nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. And so we're in an island up here. We're all by ourselves. So we really have to bolster and keep at least this minimum staffing of four people, two engines on duty. So the thing that I'd like us to do with this whole study and everything is look at everything very carefully. One of my whole things is taking over the ambulance service and doing things like that to bolster our economic, you know, our ability to provide more firefighters. And instead of having just two paramedic and an EMT, or two paramedics sitting in an ambulance station, we'd have two more firefighters. And that's what they could be. Also, we could be charging for calls, possibly. These are all things, I'm not saying that these are all things that would work, but I'm saying that what I'd like us to do is really take a hard look at all of this and make sure. I would not want to do anything for this district that's not good for the community. It's the way the ambulance system is up here right now. We have one ambulance. When it goes off the hill, we don't have another ambulance for a long time. I sat on the edge of my driveway with a kid that wiped out on his motorcycle for over an hour waiting for a second ambulance. He had a closed head wound. He never woke up. His golden hour disappeared on my driveway, and that is unacceptable. And that's our ambulance system up here right now. We've got to do something about it. It's in our chapter that we can provide our own ambulance company for the district. A lot of fire departments are doing it now. Cal Fire has paramedics. We can do it with them and partner with them. We could possibly even partner with the ambulance company. I know that Contra Costa Fire, where I used to work, is partnering with AMR. They have all their own ambulances now, and they're making money. I've heard that their budget is fat right now. They've just put on tillers, all kinds of equipment. They have a helicopter now. This is all in the 10 years that I've been gone. So things can happen. I'm not saying that it's perfect for this district. I'm not saying it could ever happen. But I'm saying let's look at all of these things. Let's look at all this stuff. When they start building and developing, we need to think about this fire department and what the effect is going to be on us. Rush Creek, we got nothing for it. Evergreen expanded, we got nothing for it. This next project, we have to get something for it. And it's our duty to get something for it and to protect our district and to protect our constituents. And that's what I want to see.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Yes, Mr. Sloan.
Well, we'll take this in order of age or something here. reverse order of seniority. I joined the board shortly after the decision was made to go with Cal Fire. And one of the reasons that I took the position was that I agreed with that decision. I thought, okay, these guys got screwed on correctly in this thing, so I had an opening, so I got myself appointed. I think it's worked out pretty well. One of the things you didn't mention, but one of the other advantages that we've gotten by having Cal Fire be our contractor rather than attempting to run our own fire department is we don't have to worry about staffing. People leave, they get replaced. It happens, you have to worry about it, but it happens kind of automatically. Cal Fire has a large pool of folks, and they just transfer somebody in. So that had become, as I understand it, as the reserve program got kind of hurting a little because the reserves could go find permanent jobs elsewhere. That was a real issue for such a small department. One person leaves, you're suddenly shot for months. So that's been, I think, one of the real advantages. I have one question. So this is the numbers that you have on here. The Schedule A numbers are the budget, the contract budget numbers, right? Not the actuals.
No, they're the
contract max. Yeah. So I mean, one of the things that has kind of saved, I think Pete alluded to this, but just to be clear, one of the things that, if you just look at this chart, you raise the question, how come we haven't run out of money already? And that's because fundamentally Cal Fire is very efficient and has not actually charged us as much as the contract maximum. So every year we put it in the budget for the contract amount, and so far every year it's come in considerably under that, like $100,000 less. So the drain on the reserve hasn't been as big as you would have thought it would be just looking at the budget. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, CAL FIRE has had some changes recently in terms of the new firefighter contracts and so forth, so certainly the price of stuff is going to go up. I'm not excusing that, and we do have, I'm not trying to diminish the fact that we have an issue with funding going forward. It's just that's kind of how we managed to get where we are so far. And that was just context. I don't have any, you know, I think we do need to look at it globally. We need to see if there's, I mean, there is no magic solution. It costs money to provide the service. And it's a question of how much service level do we want to have. We added the Amador plan 4 years ago, something like that. It was a year or two after the original contract went in. Partly because we were right in the middle of heavy drought, so the fire season was never stopping. So it was kind of like get it for free for a couple of years.
We got it for free a lot.
So it does provide, you know, two engines basically. I mean, it gives a lot better coverage. Community engagement, we got to, you know, the question is, what do we want? How much of what service do we want to provide? And really, you know, I sincerely hope that we're going to get a lot of community input on that, because while it is our responsibility to make those decisions, I just think the five of us are, you know, we're looking for a feeling of what is actually, what's the level of service that the community thinks that we should be trying to start. And we have to figure out how to pay for it.
Thank you, Director Swan.
If, as a former volunteer fire department, volunteer up here, firefighter up here, and then I was one of the paid call firefighters for Chief Williamson for many years, it's a unique mix up here. You know, people are saying fire engine and fire engine. Well, there's many different types of fire engines, and we have a wildland-urban intermix here. We have some of the buildings up here are going to need ladder trucks. Some of them really do. Some of them need, and then we need wildland fire engines. We need a lot of different types of fire engines, and we're able to keep those because we have the California CAL FIRE and Amador plan. We've got Type 3. We've got our own Type 1s here, so we're able to meet that mix. I just don't want to ever lose that. Mr. Swan said something about community involvement. We've got to get the community involved. We've got to go out and talk to people, have workshops so that the whole community knows the wall we're up against and what happens if we don't climb that wall, don't get on beyond that wall, whatever funding measures are necessary. And because I know we can't live on grants. That's not responsible. We as directors have a responsibility to the community to provide them with fire service at the best level that we possibly can. And to make that level adequate, the community's got to get involved. We need to have workshops.
Yes.
As Mr. Swan and John alluded to, workshops to let the community know where we're at, what we've been able to maintain, how we've maintained it. Mr. Campa has a great briefing and get the answers out there, but it's in the community. And they have to let us know how they want us to proceed.
Thank you.
I just have one really other short question. What is, under sort of best circumstances, when do we have to replace the engine?
Well, we talked a little bit about that. We have one that's 20 years old, right? Go ahead.
So 783 is a 1984 engine. That's a Type 3 engine. 787 is a Type 1. It was a 1990. And then 781 is 94. So they're varying degrees.
Well, when is the first one? Is that predictable? I mean, is there like a drop dead date when it's gotten this many miles or this many years on it?
There are recommendations that the National Fire Protection Association has of about 15 years and not later than that for frontline apparatus. But that can change with, you know, mileage and number of calls. 10,000 calls in San Francisco is different than, or 10 years in San Francisco is different than 10 years up here, for sure. So, and there's that. And then, you know, one of the other things is to consider, and Mr. Campo mentioned it, is the updates and the upgrades of the safety equipment in the apparatus, just like in my Hyundai Sonata, you know, that's 3 years old, or the one that's 13 years old. There's different upgrades that happen and safety features that are considered.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say 5 years.
Yeah, okay, I'm pulling a number out. You know, when we're talking about this, we need to have some context. So, yeah. So we're looking at probably having to do an apparatus replacement in 5 years.
Right. When you look at on the sheet that is the detail of the financial projections, and you look at those sheets that do contain the cap, the reserve, the equipment reserve, this annual reserve set aside of $183,000. There's a whole sheet that supports that, and those are the, you know, and I estimated a $600,000 cost. I'm being told that might be a little bit low, but that is accumulating that $600,000 over a 5 year period, and then for each of the two that need to be replaced, and then a 10-year period for the time going forward after that. In other words, having the $600,000 again in the bank after 10 years. They may go 15 years, but...
I'm sure by the time we get ready to replace our newest one, which is about 5 or 6 years, it's going to be close to $1 million for apparatus. Because, I mean, they go up. They go up a lot. And they're, you know, it depends. It depends on what Cal... We'll probably most likely go with the Cal Fire bid, and that's going to save us money. And, you know, but all these things have to be done, and we have to start saving for them. Not only that, is you have equipment that's getting outdated, and that has to be upgraded. You know, breathing apparatus all has to be replaced every, 5, 6 years? I mean, we always will replace it.
10 years.
Yeah, at the backs. And, you know, all this stuff has to be, you know, replaced. You know, extrication equipment. You know, it all gets old and outdated and worn out, and that stuff's expensive. Everything on a fire truck, it's like you go with a power boat, it's expensive. You go with a sailboat, it's more expensive. You go with a big rig, it's expensive. But go with a fire truck, it's more. You know, everything. So we need to be doing this. I'm glad we're talking about it. I'm glad we're going to do this, but we need to educate our public, our constituents, so they understand where we're sitting. Because it's kind of hard to sit here and then people come up to you and, oh, we don't have a problem. You know, they don't think, you know, they don't understand that we're in a crisis of money here for our fire department. To keep the same level that we have right now, we have to do something. And, you know, so now it's really the time to really look at things. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we're doing this.
And to support what Mr. Armstrong is saying, we've got to buy the top-of-the-line stuff for these firefighters that are going into burning buildings, face-to-face, direct attack on a wildland fire. We've got to have the best we can provide for them, because it's their life on the line. Mm-hmm. To save up, we've got to give them the best stuff we can give them, best engines we can give them, the best SCBAs, turnouts, communications equipment, all of those things has got to be as good as we can get. And the community needs to understand that. And it's stuff's not cheap.
Dirk Moore, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Nothing other than I agree with everything that these guys have already said.
Right. Yeah.
Sure, you have to replace your radios every, 5, 6 years.
Okay.
Especially up here, because, I mean, you're going to have, I mean, communication is a problem up here.
Well, you got a repeater on every hilltop around here. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, to get to the, I mean, I don't know exactly how much we're going to be able to do today in terms of anything other than just this is exposing people to the facts. But, I mean, clearly, the sort of thing we're talking about here is, you know, we have to have, if we want to continue to provide the same level of service, just the same level of service that we currently have with the Schedule A and the amateur plan, over and meet our commitment or our necessity of replacing equipment as we go along, we are looking at a fairly significant revenue shortfall. And that means we have to come up with the revenue someplace, since it doesn't just drop from heaven. Clearly, we are talking about another assessment or special tax event coming up. Right. As long as Mr. Gray is here, I'm just going to bring up my favorite topic that I never give up on. The way we get our property tax is there's this rather complicated allocation scheme that was set up in 1976, if I understand correctly. And I've been asking, it may not be possible, I just wonder, is that still the appropriate allocation for our district today?
I'm going to defer to Tracy, but the way I understand it, is that that's the point that's set up by the state of California, that we don't have, the county doesn't have any control over the distribution of that. Was that 1996 on the realignment of ABA?
I'm not sure the year.
Anyway, that's...
It is the state that determines that.
And is that ever reviewed? I mean, that's, I mean, my question, things change, you know, I mean, I have no idea if it was reevaluated at this point, whether that would be good or bad for the district, because you've got things like Phoenix Lake, you've got big developments on the other side of the river that weren't there back when some of these things were going in, so I don't know if it would actually be good or bad.
But I understand that I had discussions with Debbie Batista, our county clerk auditor, some time ago when that came up, and each special district, the formulation as far as distributing those funds is done under that matrix, under that same thing, whether we're in Goldberg or Clean Heart, mm-hmm. whatever, it's that's what it is. Now, can that be changed? It certainly can be changed. it's going to be difficult. Maybe that's something that we want to have CSAC, California State Association of Counties, look at. It's always, you know, waking up the gorilla sometimes.
It's one of those things where I'm not sure whether this would turn out to be a good thing or a bad thing, but it's just, it hasn't been reviewed in an awfully long time. And so,
we want to know if it goes up.
The alternatives were. It'd be nice to know what the alternatives might be. But in any event, I just want to, you know, you all, I don't think it's just the elephant in the room thing. You know, we're talking about the tax. At some point, phased in, rolling off, I don't know. We have to look at the financial requirements. That's assuming that we want to at least maintain our current level of service.
Okay, this is, as I said in the beginning, this is the first of many informational workshops that we're going to have on this subject. So if there's no other comments.
One thing I'd like to do is, if we don't mind, since we do have a captive audience, we got a guard at the door. Keeping people in. Any input that we can get now at this point, it would be great. And then also, if we can get some input about how we might be able to bring this message out to the community.
Okay.
Because in reality, not doing this, someone's going to say, what the heck were you thinking? Not even, you know, even though they'll have the chance to vote it down, mm-hmm. and they may well vote it down, if we don't bring it out there, I think we're in a worse situation. But anyway, I'd like to...
Okay, so yeah, we'll open it up to the public. Oh, I'm sorry, yes, John?
I'd just like to tell everybody, get your friends involved, bring them in here. We really need, we need to get the whole community involved with this and make the right decision. You know, I don't want to see us go through all this and then get it voted down and we're back in the same spot again. Or, you know, with, I want something that's right for the community. So we need to get everybody here, a lot of people. Yes.
And we've had some success with the park committee. Mm-hmm. Just, it's two directors. We have, we're enjoying some success with communications with that now and the park aspect of Groveland Community Services District. I'm throwing it out there for discussion. Do you think maybe a fire committee that is a little bit more mobile, doesn't have to be a special meeting, ad hoc, where we can go to different organizations throughout the community, talk to these folks, have a briefing? What do you, I'm just throwing it out there for discussion because as everyone here has agreed, and I see a lot of heads nodding, the community needs to know what's going on here. Or we're certainly, any assessment or tax that we propose is not going to get it, is not going to get approved.
Right, we can...
I'm throwing it out for discussion.
Right, that can be brought up at the next regular board meeting. We'll add that to the agenda.
We'll have a conversation
about outreach. Yes, yes. Okay, now we'll open the floor to the public. Sir, you had your hand up earlier.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to thank you for your comment that the elephant in the room, you know, that's a big tax that's coming. I don't think that's even questionable whether it's coming or not, whether it comes from you or the state. Just as a quick side note, there's a pretty good article in the San Jose Mercury today regarding wild land urban interface tax and how people who live in that interface be paying more than the folks who live in San Francisco. I don't like that statement, but I see the logic of it. And you know, the people with the most votes, taxes come. It's going to happen one way or another. Well, I don't like it.
That's along the same line as what the governor imposed, that hundred and some odd dollar tax on each parcel, on every building on the parcel that was livable. So like if you had two houses on your property, you had to pay like $250. Okay, so that was the same thing, and that of course that went away after some fighting and this and that. But you're right, that's the same type of thing. And I've heard that grumbling too, and that's so wrong. But that's another thing, we're misrepresented up here. Hate to say it, but we are.
Okay, yes, Ms. K. Bro. Ms. Bro.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I have two comments. First of all, we used to have a volunteer fire department, and I was told when CAL FIRE came on that we couldn't use volunteers. And I did have a conversation with Chief White, and he said it might be possible that we could still have volunteers working within our CAL FIRE station. So I think that's something to explore. Secondly, when we got our last engine, I believe it was a matching grant, and if I remember, it was something like 800,000, maybe a little more, but it was a, I think it was a 50% matching grant. That is something else we should explore, because that's when we buy the engine, when that grant is available. I know it took a year to get that engine, and I think it came from Pearson, Florida. However, we need to keep tabs on that.
Okay. Yes.
Hi, I just popped in here so you can all see me. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Tracy Riggs. I'm the county administrator. And we did bring with us a few people, so if you get a chance and afterwards you'd like to talk with them. We have Supervisor Gray, Chief White over here, and Chief Murphy, our Assistant County Administrator Earhart, and then David Gonzalez is our Community Resources Agency Director, and then Mo Frank from the Polka Dots over here, and she's the Deputy County Administrator. So what I wanted to say was I don't want any of our districts ever to feel like they're in anything by themselves. I've worked quite a bit in the past with Mr. Campo. We've had great success in other districts that he's worked in and doing collaborative work, pulling in funds. But that I do want to, if you haven't been watching, one of the board's primary focus and priorities this year is related to fire. And that comes in many different ways. What you're struggling with is not any different than what any other county district or fire county we're all dealing with it. We're looking at outdated equipment. We're looking at not enough revenues to support ongoing expenses. So the best way we, any of us, can approach this is if we come at it in a unified way and we work together. By pulling resources and working together, we can do so much more than we ever do when we're trying to do this separately. You've already experienced some of that by working with CAL FIRE as opposed to trying to do it by yourself. What I would ask is that you would still direct your general manager to continue working with us so that we can continue giving you information and participating in these types of discussions. We are having our own discussions within the county. We're doing our own strategic work groups. Pete should be there. He has a great voice to lend into that. But I said, when we look at fire, we don't just look at what is county and not districts. We look at everything countywide. And that is critical, and we have to keep that going. So I don't have an answer for you other than that we're looking at the same things. We're looking at ways that we can make it better, better ways that we can collaborate and pool our resources and provide the best emergency response across the board to all of our residents all year long. So I don't have that answer for you. I just want to make sure, you know, you can reach out to me. Pete and I will continue to work closely together. We always have in all the years that I've worked with Tuolumne, and I'm just hoping that you will allow us that time as we all work through this rather than approaching this separately, because if we do, we will have differing messages and we will cause confusion and we will not gain what we hope to gain as we move forward through this process. And I am available for any questions, and we can stay afterwards too if you'd like to talk.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Any other public comments?
Oh. One last comment, and I just want to segue off of what Tracy just said and then also some of the comments by Peter, is that you're not alone. The reality is that that's part of the reason for the fire study that the county put on, is to understand where is all the different fire districts in Tuolumne County, as well as the county fire department, the city of Sonora, as well as the Rancheria. How's everybody doing fiscally, and what can we do? What other options can we look at? So I want to make sure that as you talk to your constituents, as you talk to your friends and neighbors, it's not any one issue that Groveland is dealing with and everybody else is fine. This is a universal issue, and this goes all the way back to when we were volunteer fire departments, and it's this long, painful transition into paid staff, because nationwide we just see volunteerism going down, and we're doing, these are the after effects, to come up with a paid staff fire department, and for you as a district to have two engines, essentially, paying for two engines with the Amador, or with CAL FIRE, that's a significant impact. But, as your director here said, it's necessary. We are isolated up here on the hill. For, to have that two in, two out, we need that second engine back up right away. And then your next engine is really coming from Chinese Camp or Blanchard or from Mariposa. So it's an isolation that we have to recognize. And I really want to thank you for your comments regarding getting us the best equipment and taking care of our firefighters. Really appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yes.
I just wanted to make a comment that I think you brought it up, Spencer, forming a committee. I think that would be a great start to get input from the community. And also, since we have Pine Mountain Lake, a number of part-time, weekender type of residents, if there's some way they were interested to get their input, whether dial in or surveys or something. And then, so I just wanted to comment on that. I would fully support it, and I would participate. Secondly, a question I had on the budget, because we are in such a forest type of area, if there were a large fire that happened and we needed resources from all over the state, who funds that? Where?
Cal OES. OES. Go ahead.
So real quick, if the fire originates on the Forest Service land, the Forest Service is going to be responsible for that while it's on the Forest Service. As it spreads in, when we look at the rim fire, as that fire continues to spread over to what's referred to as state responsibility area, which is primarily the private lands, the state CAL FIRE is responsible for that, and so that's where we would pick up the firefighting costs. As that starts to impact the community, though, and that's where all the districts need to recognize their own liability. I mean, we are responsible, in Groveland Fire, we are responsible for the protection of the structures. Now, that said, understand that
CAL FIRE is going to be your partner and always be involved, and to put that fire out before we have the structures impacted. And so we're responsible for the fiscal costs on putting the fire out. So it's I want to make sure that you understand that if my incident commander, if our incident commander, needs 10 strikes of engines to put the fire out, and, but when they get there, it's better for us to go protect the structures. CAL FIRE still pays for them.
Okay. Thank you.
So you have SRA and LRA. LRA is local responsibility.
Okay.
That's us.
Okay.
No, actually, it's not. The only two sections of LRA in Tuolumne County is in Sonora and Tuolumne.
Okay, that's right.
That's when LRA, you're responsible for the wildland component.
Right.
So throughout Groveland, all of that is SRA and the state's responsibility.
Thank you. Josh, yes. I want to ask, and maybe this is kind of off the side, but it's related to the question that was just asked. In the event that there was a large extended fire that, you know, lasted a period of time and CAL FIRE was heavily engaged and the station was fully occupied, all that, is there a portion of that that would impact that Schedule A contract? In other words, would we plan to maximize out the budget, as Director Swan was saying, in or maybe multiple incidents in that way?
Well, so now we're going back to big contracts between the federal government, the state, and then also the CFMA, as well as the CFAA, and there's these different agreements. Part of the language of the old agreement under the CFMA was that the local agency was responsible until they were exhausted. So what does that mean? And that language has kind of gone away in the new contract, but it's still kind of ambiguous of how much, if there was a rim fire that actually came up over and we didn't stop it and it impacted Groveland, how much is the fiscal impact to Groveland to be involved in fighting that fire? My argument is that once you are at capacity, and when you staff one engine, that engine still needs to respond to medical aids and still traffic collisions and everything else. You're already, just like Twain Hart and Columbia and Miwok, you're at max. You have to have that engine to be able to respond to the emergencies in your district. So as an agency administrator for the state, I'm not going to come to Groveland and say, or any one of our other districts, whether it's under contract with CAL FIRE or not, and say, well, you're responsible for six pieces of equipment. That's not realistic. They can't staff it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
We're going to minimize the impacts to the fiscal liability for Groveland.
Just for what it's worth, during the RIM fire, maybe what you were thinking of, when we had, you know, fire engines from Long Beach parked up the hill from my house and things like that, we didn't pay for anything for that. The state could not. I don't know if that was just ordinary operating procedure or if that was because it was a state emergency and that provided OES funds or something to pay for it. But in point of fact, we, you know, the state understands that we only have so much money. I mean, we can't, you know, we aren't, you know, when something like that happens, it's an emergency.
It doesn't do the state any good to take a district and drive them into bankruptcy. Regardless of where we are in the state.
So we didn't pay, as best as I recall, we didn't pay anything for any of those out of area. No. There were dozens of them.
Yes, Ms. Krebs.
I'm just wondering if anybody here in the district has floated some numbers, in other words, said, this is our shortfall. If we charge people $50 a year, $75 a year, this is what, has anybody worked out what they think a special tax would cost for property owners?
Well,
I'm not asking you, I'm asking them.
Measure D.
Pardon me?
Let's look at Measure D.
Yeah, but Measure D was quite a few years ago.
I understand, but we can pretty much look at these negative numbers. The thing that we're going to have to do is make a determination locally about, do we want an equipment, if we're going to go out for a measure, do we want an equipment replacement fund? Do we not? Are we good with the station? Do we want more? Are we good with the medical response and all that thing? We need to make some determinations about that to see how it affects that number. And then you basically look at your financing mechanisms that you have, either assessments, taxes, fees, and all those, and then you you have someone do a projection similar to what we've seen with the water and sewer rate studies. I would say they were probably pretty spot on with Measure D, and had that passed, we probably would be in a much better condition. I don't know whether it was perfect because I haven't really checked the math, but I would venture to guess you're probably looking at 100 to 120.
Which the last assessment was about $117.10 before Measure D vote came up, so that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it's reasonable.
Yes.
I have two things I'd like to ask. Did the district get a chunk of change when Rush Creek was built for fire and ambulance? No. Because the district serviced. Why?
It's not in the county boundary.
The county did not put in for that, and to me, that's not right. And that should have been, I mean, with this one that's going in at Sawmill Mountain.
Terra V.
Yeah, I am going
to. Is somebody going to get on that one?
Oh, we're staying. I think the board is all on board with it. And
so is the county.
And, you know, so the board understands. I think we're all on the same page that we want something for it, and we want something reasonable for it.
Supervisor Gray.
First of all, we don't know whether it's going to be a project or not. It's
no. What about right? Let's talk about Rush Creek.
So you're within those projects are outside the district, and we have our CRA director here. My understanding, we can't impose a cost and give it directly to the district on something that's outside the district. That's something that maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. But
what did you say?
I
didn't hear. He said he would.
All right. Well, go ahead. So we recognize this. We've recognized this for a while, and this has been part of our overall discussion about a number of things, about raising the TOT tax, about a sales tax. All of these things are in our discussion. We had a board retreat here recently, and a spinoff on that is another work session, and hopefully people can come and listen to what we're doing. So we're looking at ways to try to minimize the impact, to figure out a way how we can do this better in the future. Can't go back, but we can certainly make it better in the future. So I'm going to refer it to David if he has any more comments.
They're out of our district, is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Okay, if they have a fire or somebody has a heart attack up there, who takes care of them?
Josh, do you have an estimate on the number of calls that are made outside the district that you respond to, by any chance?
By the district or by CAL FIRE?
By CAL FIRE that goes out outside the district.
By CAL FIRE, 150. By Groveland, and let's not confuse, it's CAL FIRE personnel on the Groveland engine. So from Mineral Road in 2018, we had 150 responses. 150 responses. And 60 responses from Station 78.
So roughly 60 on a 120 corridor. That could have went to Moccasin, could have went to Yosemite, anywhere along that corridor. So about 60. But then we also have to think that maybe one of those was maybe one.
Right, I understand that, yeah.
But again, this is what we're going forward. We're trying to figure out how can we maximize the protection to the people in the district and also along the corridor. Because, quite frankly, one of our other big problems as far as income is we haven't grown. You take a project like Terra View, that's growth. you got to make sure that you have the mechanism in place to pay for the services as something like that is.
That aren't they out of the district?
Yes, but we're a partnership. Remember, everybody responds to everybody here. It's not
right.
It's not
right.
If something, everything is gone from Groveland, you're going to get it from someplace
correct.
Else. It may take longer, so it's a mutual benefit aid. So going forward, we're working on this. This is what we recognize it. I've recognized it for a long time. I don't know how many times I've beat up Tracy and Mo over the years. How can we do this better and make it, I don't want to use the word fair, but provide a better level of service for everybody. That's the goal.
Well, see, I think this is going to be a hard sell because not everybody's going to be paying for it. And the saddest part of this is there's a bad taste in the ratepayer's mouth because of all the increases, and we still have no money in the reserves. I mean...
Well, I'm going to speak on that real quick. The public seems to have issues with the fact that things go up. Healthcare goes up. Vehicles... The equipment that the district needs, salaries go up. Chemicals go up. The stuff we need to pump the stuff, everything goes up. And rates had not gone up in over 8 years, close to 10 years. So that's the bad taste that the public should be having, is that there were no rate increases.
Well,
and now that there is... They need to just swallow it and understand that things are going to continue to go up and rates will continue to go up also.
Well, there's no other way to
There is no other way.
I know, but Janice, that's a hard swallow
for a
lot of people.
For a lot of years, they didn't. It was, everything went up and the district went through every penny they had and every reserve they had. It was spent on those issues that the public wasn't paying for.
I'm in total agreement that our infrastructure needs to be fixed. I know that.
Yeah, but it's not just the pipes. It's also the salaries, the health care, the vehicles they're driving, the equipment, the chemicals, everything else on top of it. Yes, Director Armstrong.
I agree with Janice. Is 100% right. The ball has been kicked down, the can's been kicked down the road. The money, everybody, all the directors are always proud that they didn't raise rates and stuff like that. Well, that didn't do anybody any favors. You know, and now our pants are down around our ankles and we are trying to play catch up. And that's exactly what we're doing. I understand that and I feel bad for you.
I feel bad for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I feel bad for everybody in this district. But the only way out is to do this and to dig
out. I understand that, John.
And to bite the bullet,
Ronnie.
And
okay.
To go.
Ronnie?
I would just like to reiterate that what we're talking about today is fire. And those funds are not affected at all by water and sewer charges. They're completely different buckets that are on other ends of the yard.
Exactly.
So bringing up rate increases for sewer services in regards to fire is irrelevant.
Well,
it's a completely different issue.
With the Avalon,
I just wanted to make sure that
I got it. I got it.
Yes,
on that note, with the Avalon taxes, remember we had a drop. I mean, my house was upside down. It's just now getting back upright. So, yeah, down in Modesto, property prices, our house down there has been going up way more than our house up here. It takes a lot longer up here for our values to come back, and that's what drives the fire department, is mm-hmm. property values.
So yeah, I just wanted to point out that thank you for your input, and I think that you make a very good point, which is not that you are personally complaining about something, but pointing out that this is going to be something that we have to address.
Mm-hmm.
From the standpoint
exactly.
of our ratepayers and taxpayers, there's going to be a tendency to conflate everything together. The sewer rates just went up, so for a sewer customer, of whom there are only about half the folks that we service, but this is going to, you know, inevitably is going to get conflated in their minds with here's yet another rate increase.
Absolutely.
And we need to take some effort to figure out how to present that in a way that people can maybe understand why this is going on. That it's not just that we're out of control and just raising rates all over the place all the time.
That is going to be a real problem. Yeah.
Particularly, just a second, considering how many non-residents we have. Who are still going to be affected by these increases. It's getting the message out to them, I think, is going to be actually the hardest thing.
Well,
yes, Pauline. I'm sorry, Pauline.
So the new development, Terra V, or whatever it's called, I thought that the plan included costs for fire and ambulance and medical services, but the fact that hotels have all kinds of taxes to their guests when you stay, is that, and we have so many county people here, maybe that's a question, can we impose a tax that would support services to them from our district?
A hotel tax. So there is a hotel tax, that is the transient occupancy tax, which is currently 10%. That was one of the things Supervisor Gray just spoke to. And one of the conversations we will be having, you may know, Calaveras and Mariposa on both sides just increased their tax. So one of the things that we've all been talking about, even if Terra V were to go in, and they are working with us to try and meet some of these, because they're just as concerned. What if something were to happen to their facility? Thankfully, that hasn't happened with these facilities. But we talked about some of it, and with David's staff, it was based on just the occurrence, meaning the number of calls to those types of facilities we can't require because the call volume is not there. But they are willing to work with us to do other types of things. So we're having those conversations. The other thing is, as we'll be talking with our board, if that development were to go in, just the increase in TOT alone without increasing it, is something that we'll be talking with our board is, would they be willing to dedicate that? Now, what I'm hearing is that there is equal concern, just amongst all of the board members, about meeting the needs as well, because fire is a huge concern and the number one concern for the board. But these don't happen overnight, and so just based on just that increase alone could be enough to completely change the way fire, not just fire, but law enforcement as well, so emergency services overall in the 120 corridor. So we are having, Pete's been part of that conversation, he'll continue to be part of that conversation, and there's a team of us working on that. But overall, we're having that very thing, it's TOT, and it is collected by every single hotel owner across the state of California.
How do we get updates on the progress?
Well, Pete will be able to give you updates, because he's participating.
Yes, sir.
Is there any possibility that you can require this developer to put in a fire station or an emergency services station instead?
I'm not sure everybody understands. My name is David Gonzalez. I'm the Community Resource Agency Director. All these projects that you hear about are the responsibility of my agency as well as all the other county facilities. So these types of projects go through a land entitlement process, and there's environmental and land entitlement process go through. You cannot provide and require something that's not a direct nexus for an impact. But Tracy said before, the call volumes at these new facilities for fire and medical are actually extremely low. Just like in new homes, sprinklers always lower that risk, and to make a requirement, you cannot fix existing deficiencies with that. So, but there are, these developers are very savvy. They understand the needs of the community. They've been extremely good about talking to my staff about cooperating and working with our county and the district. I would encourage you to listen to the positive sides of things instead of folks that may not like to have things that we have to grow our tax base to encourage agents to provide services. And that is not just here. That's our entire county that Tracy's referring to. Mm-hmm. So what Tracy's saying, talking about TFC and the tax base, the land values in that, all contribute back to our community, not just one. So we are working with them. They've been very good about it. But to answer your question directly, there has to be a direct nexus to require a direct mitigation or something.
But can you project based on the incidence on the population now to what
it's could actually be? Very small. So you'd be careful on these studies. How we are working with them. I promise you that.
Okay.
I'm working with your director. Okay. The conversations are going very well. I just encourage you to try to stay positive about that.
We need the growth. We need the tax base. We need, it's going to help our community, but the impact on services is really a puzzle.
And it's very good. Very good to work.
Okay. Thank you, Pauline. Yes, John has a...
How much does Rush Creek pay for the ambulance?
I don't know that they did pay anything for the ambulance.
But we pay
for the number of calls that go up there. Again,
they did not pay for it?
We have 550 calls. The ambulance is an enterprise fund.
I understand that, but my question is, how much did they pay?
I can't answer that question, but I could give you the structure.
Well, I would like to know, John, did they pay for the ambulance? Because I pay for the ambulance. Everybody in this room that lives here pays for that ambulance. And the ambulance is going up country. So tell me, how much did they pay, John?
It's an enterprise fund. The ambulance does not pay for itself. The county subsidizes.
I understand that.
Subsidizes the county. Subsidizes the ambulance.
And along with us.
John, let him finish.
$138,000 a year.
How much?
About $138,000. That's pretty close. Not to the cent, but it's pretty close. So, in that, the ambulance has been an enterprise fund. You collect money based on calls. So, a call outside the district, as an example, they're going to bill, I believe, the insurance companies around $2,400 to $2,500 for an ambulance call from here to Sonora. I think the last figure that I saw on the cost for a Social Security call was somewhere under $400. So there's where the problem comes up. But as far as paying for it, they pay property taxes, John, okay? Just like we all do. There's a subsidy of $138,000, so some of the property taxes that they're paying are going to go towards paying for that subsidy to allow us to have them. So yes, in a way, they do pay for it. They won't send us a check, but they do pay for it.
So basically...
Okay, we want to bring the discussion back to the reason that we're here today, please. There are so many issues that do need to be discussed, but not at today's workshop, please. Okay, Director Moore.
Kind of on the back of Clarissa's comment, I think when we do start having these future workshops, we do need to find a good way to present this and quote sell it to the districts and stuff. And as far as kind of like what you were talking about, you know, just things go up. I mean, nobody's bills decrease over a 5-year period or whatever. But you mentioned the water and the sewer. You kind of have a little bit of control over those. You know, if you're on a tight budget, you can make darn sure your toilet isn't leaking and stuff like that. I look at the fire stuff as, that's why you have insurance. That's why you have health insurance and car insurance and home insurance, because that's an unknown. You have practically zero control over it. I mean, unless you're an arsonist. That we might have to kind of try to sell it like that. Like, we have to think of it in terms of that $50, $100 or whatever it's going to be is part of our insurance policy for when we need it, because we will need it. When we need it, we have to have that insurance policy. I mean, I always kind of try to think of anything in a business sense, put it to your own personal budget, kind of to make that connection, and it kind of sometimes makes more sense then, because mm-hmm. I'm not going to give up my house insurance just because the cost went up. You know, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. it's not too soon.
Yes, Ms. Crow.
Hi. I would like to say that I understand the concerns of a lot of people saying we're going to have a fire tax and it's just going to be the people here that pay as the ambulance, but I do remember many years ago when fire camp was up at Castlebaum Meadows, I mean, Cal Fire brought in all the resources. They came, just like the Rim Fire, they come from everywhere. So we do benefit. The whole area does benefit. So we just have to figure out what the numbers are, what is affordable for the people in this community. That's the key. What is affordable? I just wanted to bring that up.
Okay. Thank you for that comment. Okay. Any other, we're going to close the floor right now. Any other director comments? Yes, sir.
I just want to say that my whole concern is for our district. Mm-hmm. You know, I care about everybody else. Mutual aid is mutual aid. Automatic aid is different. You know, I just want to make sure that we take care of ourselves first, and then we can help other people. I mean, for fire departments to work, you have to have mutual aid. You have to have automatic aid. You have to help other people. That's just the nature of the business. That's the way it is. But then there is a certain point where it starts not becoming mutual aid, or it starts not becoming automatic aid, because you're going there all the time. Automatic aid is something that you're going to most of the time. Mutual aid is something that just happens once in a while. Okay, so we have to be careful with that, and we have to protect our funds here. To me, the simple fact that we're paying for the ambulance here, $100-some-odd a year, and a big business goes in and they're making money, and they're using that same ambulance service, you'd think they could kick in, and they're not. That's taking advantage of our district, our community, and that's not right. And I don't like that, and I just want to make sure that we get a fair shake.
Thank you, Director Armstrong. Does staff have anything that they would like to add at this point?
Again, I will be fully engaged to the maximum possible with the county and all of the efforts they've got going on. I think we had, four or five different meetings scheduled over the next couple months.
Are they public meetings?
They are staff level meetings, draft review documents, brainstorming sessions. They will be. The issue is going to be brought before the Board of Supervisors. I don't know if that's scheduled. This is related to the fire study currently.
Yes.
Well, is it on the agenda?
Yes, it is. There's a special meeting of the Board of Supervisors on March 20th. March 20th.
Thank you.
Okay. And that is definitely...
It's a public meeting. It's at 6 o'clock in the evening, so to make it easier for the public and board members of the various districts to come. Because as Pete was saying, fire service is a system, and we all depend on each other. So we all need to be successful. All the districts, the county, the city, the tribe, all need to be, in order to provide the services that we need and... I think our community is asking for, we need to be all successful. And a majority of us in this county are in the same boat that we've been talking about today. And that's what the study was really looking at. What can we look at, or what kind of options are there as far as fire services, and how can we be sustainable in the future?
So,
I believe, I don't know if
would it be live streamed?
A special meeting. I don't know if it covers special meetings.
I don't think there's a video on the special meeting. Yes, Director.
When are we going to meet again regarding this fire revenue? Fire department revenue.
Work group plan.
Yeah,
we'll have it on the regular board meeting agenda.
Okay.
We'll talk about the structure and process going forward.
Sure. Okay, I'd like to thank all the county representatives that are here today, definitely the fire department, and all of the members of the public that were able to come out today, and the directors for all of your input and ideas. We greatly appreciate it. And we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.